Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
One. It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. We are back after a brief hiatus, about a week. Tommy, how you doing? This is your host, Jonathan Hernandez. Tommy, what's going on?
Not much, man. It's funny you say brief hiatus, because I think once a week is pretty good, actually.
It is.
For some reason, it feels like a brief hiatus to me, too. But once a week, I think, is pretty good, especially when I was very disappointed to turn on my Serial podcast last week and find out that they're now going to once every other week, which I think is ridiculous. But anyway.
Yeah, so at least we have once a week. So what have you been up to? I've heard you've been sick with the flu. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got the flu. It's going around. It's not been great.
Did you have to miss work at all?
I got it like this past weekend when I was like at a work retreat. And then Monday we had off for MLK. And then I tried to go in. I went in yesterday. And then today I just worked from home because I was like, I need to just recover and get through this.
Right. Something's definitely going around. I was out sick on Thursday. And then when I came back in on Friday, people were like, oh, we thought you won the Powerball, dude. And I was like, yeah. Nah, I didn't win the Powerball. I won a Byron ball, which is something else entirely. So yeah, let's just get into the flow of things. We might be kind of rusty after a week and one day. Yeah. But let's just get to some, I guess, around the NBA talk, and then we'll just do the same thing we normally do in terms of we'll cover the last week or so of Lakers games and just talk about the players that or just highlight the players that are worthy of talking about. Once again, you can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Also, rate and review us on iTunes. The more you do that, yeah, I don't know. See, we're out for a week. I can't even finish this. Maybe down the road later. All right, so let's get some NBA talk. First, let's do a quick NCAA update, Brandon Ingram, Ben Simmons update. I know you watched one of their games. I know you watched an Ingram game this past week, like Wednesday. Do you have any impressions on Brandon Ingram, what you've seen, stuff like that? Any new updates?
Nothing really new that I've seen that's like, oh, that's different. I think both of them are going to be legit like NBA stars. They both have all of the tools. Brandon Ingram is a little bit less along than Simmons is right now, but he is such a pure shooter that might counteract any other deficiencies he has in his game. And he's shown that he knows, unlike like recent Duke prospects like, you know, Jabari Parker and Jahlil Okafor, he's shown that he knows how to use his athletic abilities and his length and everything to play really solid defense. So I'm really into Ingram. I'm really into Simmons. If we can get either, I'd be thrilled.
Right. I know you brought up when you were watching the game, you're like, forget about his offense, dude. He's really impressing me defensively. So that was good to see. I think his last few games, to recap, Brandon Ingram, he had a subpar game the last game, 13 points, but he had 11 rebounds and 3 assists. The game before that, 25 points, 3 blocks, 2 assists, 4 rebounds. I think the game you watched was like against Clemson or whatever. He had 16 points, 4 rebounds, and like 1 assist. But I think 15 of his points came in the first half. Anyways, 3 straight losses for Duke, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, but I think, you know, Brandon Ingram, I think his defense has really been the thing that's stood out to me as well, just in terms of how well he's able to use his length, how well he's able to recover and really just block everybody's shot that's in his vicinity. The other thing is, like, I think we talked about how his handles before, but I think more and more he's beginning to show it out in the perimeter where he does have a little bit of shake. It's not, like we said before, it's not Kevin Durant shake, but it's also more than I had anticipated, the way he's able to control his dribble and then also control his body when he faces contact. He's able to really get shots off. So good look for Ingram. I think the other thing that we haven't talked about yet is that Ingram, I guess the one thing that he has going for him is that he's really young. I think he's like a full year or about a year younger than Ben Simmons. So just another thing to keep in mind in terms of, you know,
they're both young.
He's developing pretty quickly. Ben Simmons, I think he faced his first test the last game in a 71-57 loss to Texas A&M. Had 10 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Only shot 3 for 9, though. I was following Mike Schmitz. I think he's the Draft Express guy. And he was just talking about how Texas A&M pretty much sagged off of him the entire game in the half court, and he really struggled with that. So just something to look into with Ben Simmons, something that I brought up in the past too, that in the half court, he's kind of boring and he can be a little randally. I mean, obviously he's a lot more talented and can do a lot more things, but obviously the one weakness that he does have is that he doesn't shoot jump shots. So for teams that know how to defend that well, he's going to have to either show that jump shot or just be more aggressive. So we'll see how that goes. So that's our draft update. They're pretty much neck and neck. I'd be happy to have either. I think some people are overplaying Ingram just because he has the skill sets that we need. And then, you know, kind of talking about the fit thing. It's almost like the DeMar DeRozan thing, which we'll get into a little bit later, where Ben Simmons just doesn't have all the skills you'd want. But just trust me, Ben Simmons is really, really talented. I don't think you could be sure one way or the other right now. So just continue to watch those two. Let's get into DeMar DeRozan. So I think this is another thing that's been going on in Lakerland, just a debate between DeMar DeRozan. My main take with DeMar DeRozan is he my first choice? No, pretty much no. But would I freak out if Mitch Kupchak signed this guy? No, my answer is also no, because, you know, I don't understand the freak out between some Lakers fans where they're losing their heads over a potential DeMar DeRozan signing. And I tweeted out an article maybe 2 weeks ago by The Collegian, just highlighting how DeMar DeRozan still isn't a very effective shooting guard, even despite the fact that he can't shoot lights out and maybe his defense isn't up to par. But pretty much that article highlighted just how good a free throw shooter DeMar DeRozan is, how much he gets to the line, how much he attacks. The other thing he does is he cuts a lot. He moves a lot off the ball. So even if he doesn't space the floor in the way that you think, in terms of he doesn't space it by shooting threes well, he's always moving. So the defense always has to take account of him. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's one counteraction in terms of that's how he spaces the floor and that's how he makes defenses account for him. And then the other thing is he's improved a lot in the pick and roll. Like this guy's averaging, what is he averaging? I think he's been averaging around 4.5 assists, 5 assists the last few years. And this year he's averaging 22.8 points, 4.1 assists, 4.6 rebounds. And so I think he's really shored up his playmaking game. I watched some film on him and he's not a selfish player the way that we'd like to think in terms of he just takes terrible, bad Kobe shots. Obviously, those are going to be in there, but he's really improved his playmaking in terms of being able to read simple pick and rolls, which is what you want to see from him. And tonight he had 34.6 assists to prove my point, and only 2 turnovers, you know? And then the last thing that article highlighted was pretty much his improved post game, which, you know, he can, if you need a shot, you dump it down into him and he'll either get fouled or he'll hit a turnaround jump shot a la Kobe, you know? And this is not even talking about how exciting he is when he's on the break. And you can just imagine D'Angelo throwing a behind the head pass to DeMar DeRozan for like a crazy windmill jam.
For sure.
But so, yeah, those are my thoughts on DeMar. Any thoughts on DeMar on your end? And are you going to freak out if we sign DeMar DeRozan?
Absolutely not. I pretty much have the same reaction that you do. And that is, I can't really understand why everybody is so like violently against it. You know what I mean? Like DeMar DeRozan is arguably the best prospect that we've had, or the best player, I guess, that we've had a legitimate shot at getting in like the last 3 free agencies. Like, I would argue for our team makeup, I would take him over LaMarcus Aldridge, who, if we had LaMarcus Aldridge on our team right now, obviously we really wanted LaMarcus Aldridge. If we had him on our team right now, he would be playing the same exact position as a guy who we used the lottery pick to draft. You know what I mean? And also Larry Nance Jr., who's shown a lot. 2 years ago, we were talking about Carmelo Anthony. I would rather have DeMar DeRozan over Carmelo Anthony, probably.
Right.
He's younger. He, like you said, he's really good at getting to the line. He's a good slasher. He's putting up legitimate. This isn't like a, you know, Kevin Love in Minnesota situation. He's averaging 23 points a game with a good efficiency, shooting 44% from the field. As like the number one, essentially, or number one or number 1A option on a playoff team. And like a legit playoff team, not like a barely scraping by. So he does a lot of decent things. He averages 4 assists per game. Nobody really talks about that. Gets decent rebounds. We would need him to play the 3, which I'm not sure if he, how well he could do that. You would typically want your 3, especially if there's a few ways we can go with it, right? We could have Clarkson play the 2 and DeMar play the 3, or bring Clarkson off the bench, whatever. And maybe I'm getting too far ahead of myself here, but the reason I wouldn't be like freaked out about it is because compared to Kevin Durant, obviously he looks really bad. You know what I mean? So it's like if you whiff on Durant and you end up with DeMar, there's like a you feel a little bit bad about yourself. That being said, he's like really good still. Just at this stage in where our franchise is, we just need to accumulate as much talent as possible. Right. He's really good. It cannot be understated like how important it is to have a guy who can just go off for 30 points a game, like 4 games in a row, he'll drop 30 points on like an efficient shooting numbers, like between 45% and 50%, because that's going to open up the entire court for everybody else. Like what our team lacks right now is our young guys are too young to be able to do anything individually. And we don't have Kobe's like 40 years old. So we don't have a guy who can just draw all the defense's attention, and DeMar DeRozan can do that.
Right. And the other thing is, I think we view DeMar too much in the vacuum of, you know, we're only going to get him. But if you get a guy like DeMar, then you fill in the pieces of finding defensive pieces around
exactly.
him. You know what I mean? He's not going to be like the only one. It's just a start. It's a starting point. And DeMar's only 26 right now. He'll be 27 when we sign him in the summer, if we sign him. And, you know, I think he still has a lot to give, and he's still reaching his prime. You know, the prime ages in the NBA are, what, 27, 28, 29?
Right.
And he's been slowly progressing to that point. I don't think for either of us, he's our number one or even number two choice at the wing. It'd be Kevin Durant and then Nicholas Batum probably next, because Nicholas Batum can do a whole lot more. He can also play defense. But as a third option, sure, why not? I'll take DeMar DeRozan, and then
exactly.
we'll be able to attract other people from there.
Nothing here stops us from getting DeMar and getting Nicholas Batum, and then figuring out what we're gonna do with Jordan Clarkson, because I love Clarkson. Look, we're gonna have him on a cheap deal. We can keep him around as a sixth man. We can continue to develop him and trade him when his market is like at its peak value. Or we could just do that forever, and he could just be our sixth man forever. Or we could use like a small ball lineup when Batum plays the 4. There's just so many options. So, you know, if the Lakers came out of the summer with DeMar DeRozan and Nicholas Batum, I think that would be like a very fast way to turn an organization around, you know, especially right. how the bottom of the West has looked.
Right, and you're not even factoring in Ben Simmons, so
exactly.
you know, we could have all of those guys, and then Brandon exactly. Ingram on top of that.
Somehow so just we have ended up with Brandon Ingram too, yeah.
You just have a team full of wings at all positions, so yeah. that's the new NBA, all-wing NBA. So there you go. So yeah, don't freak out about DeMar DeRozan. I've warmed up to him recently just because he's good, and then that article states stuff, that there are ways to mitigate the he-doesn't-shoot-threes like thing, you know what I mean? Dwayne Wade hasn't shot threes his entire career. He's amazing. Obviously, he plays defense, but DeMar DeRozan has proven to be a very effective player on a very good team, so that's something that I think gets overlooked too much when we freak out about fit. Fit, we don't have a team right now, you know what I mean? Who cares about fit right now? We just got to get talent. So with that said, let's move on to, I guess, quickly to wrap this DeMar DeRozan thing up. I learned that his first max year salary wouldn't be around 30 mil. I think it'd be more around 25 mil. So that kind of comforts me a little bit more, because I think whenever we talked about max salary for guys like Batum and DeRozan, they're actually eligible for around 25 mil their first year, which doesn't seem that daunting in that respect. So guys like Batum and Horford, actually, they're eligible for 25 million. And I think that goes for DeRozan as well. So that's probably the range you're looking at. And it's not even a sure thing that they get the max. So who knows? We'll see.
They'll probably get the max.
Okay, fine. They'll get 25 mil. That's fine. Just don't freak out. That's all we're saying. With that said, I think that's it for around the NBA stuff, unless anything caught your eye around the NBA.
Nah, that's all I had.
All right, cool. So let's get to some Lakers news, and we'll just kind of transition that into Lakers, past few Lakers games.
You know, I'm just did it and it's all.
All right, so let's talk some Lakers before we get into the game stuff. There's just some few topics that I wanted to talk about. First, recently, I guess the news going around is that the Lakers are willing to trade Brandon Bass, Roy Hibbert, and Nick Young. Wow, they're willing. Who's going to be willing to trade with them is the question. With that said, who do you think is willing to trade for these guys, Tommy? And who is the most attractive piece out of these pretty much bottom barrel dudes that were willing to trade?
Okay, sorry, you said Bass, Nick Young, it was Hibbert was the third one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I can tell you right now, nobody's gonna take Hibbert. Hibbert literally does nothing for anybody. Hibbert is like the type of, this is what people don't understand again, Hibbert is the type of contract that you like to have if you're a contender, and he's just there. And the reason you like to have him if you're a contender is because theoretically you're already capped out. And what you can do is trade his expiring to a team that wants to shed a bunch of, like, you know, maybe two or three long-term deals, you know, that they have that are like six-ish mil per year. That's the only value an expiring contract holds. The problem is, the Lakers are not a contender, and they have tons of cap space, and if anything, they just want to conserve more cap space. So you're not going to find another $17 million expiring contract that you can just swap with Hibbert for a team that actually needs Hibbert, because no team needs Hibbert. You know what I mean? Right. So, you know, I was like, it's just, that's not going to happen. We're stuck with Hibbert, so we should just get used to that. I'm sure we would like to trade him, but it's not happening.
I guess the only scenario where you could find a Hibbert deal is probably for Joakim Noah, because he's out and injured and they're both expiring. So the Bulls are like, sure, we'll get a live body for Noah, and the Lakers may get like a second round pick or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe I mean, something like that. You're right. Something like that could happen where a guy's already going to be out for the entire season. So let's get at least a live body, and the Lakers can, you know, get a second rounder out of it. I could see maybe something like that happening, although I would still even argue that they'll just like stand pat with Taj and Pau, and, you know, I feel like they're not even playing Mirotić. Is he hurt, or does he just suck this year? I don't know what's going on with him, but they've got enough depth in their front court. They'll figure it out.
Right.
I feel like, honestly, given how bad Hibbert's looked in like the last few, like, Brandon Bass is legitimately a 6'7" center who's better than Roy Hibbert. In terms of those other guys though, I would say Nick Young, his issue is his contract has an additional, it's not expiring.
Yeah.
So a team might not want to commit to him beyond this season. I could see a team who was a contender who needed some bench scoring, like rolling the dice on Nick Young, because best case scenario, he comes in and he gives you 10 points a game and hits a bunch of threes and gives your bench like a needed boost. Worst case scenario, he would be expiring. The problem is he's not expiring. So if he ends up tanking like he has this year for the Lakers, he's going to just be like a, you know, rotten egg at the end of your bench for the next 2 years. So Nick Young, I can't really see. Brandon Bass, like, I tried really hard to look around at teams that could use a guy like Brandon Bass. I wasn't able to really find anyone that made sense, that would have a player that made sense for the Lakers to get. I don't know. Do you have any take on Brandon Bass?
You know, Brandon Bass is probably the most valuable out of all these three. But yeah, in terms of finding a fit, I'm sure there's some team out there that needs like a playoff veteran, a solid guy off their bench for the playoffs, especially if they have a young team. I'm sure there's some team out there. The problem with Bass is that he has a player option. So I almost wish that he had 2 years on his deal. This is like the opposite of Nick Young, right? Where Nick Young, the problem is he still has like an extra year. With Bass, the problem is you're just literally signing on a rental, where I feel like Brandon Bass is like valuable enough that you'd want him like an extra year, you know what I mean? Instead of just for half this year and then you don't know what happens to him. Because let's say his 2 year deal was a fully guaranteed 2 years for $3 million. That's a very valuable asset to have for the next year too, you know, to have a guy like Brandon Bass off your bench for $3 million and you just continue to fill your team around. So I almost wish that Brandon Bass had a 1 year longer contract so that he'd be more tradable. But pretty much what you're asking teams to do is like, hey, give us an asset for this really reliable veteran dude that you'll have for 4 months based on your playoff run. So for Brandon Bass, like, you know, I think the most you can expect is a second rounder, you know, a second round pick, or maybe a young prospect. Like if you look at the Bucks, maybe you get someone like Miles Plumlee if the Lakers want a young, like athletic big, something like that.
Miles Plumlee is so funny to me, dude. Sorry, this is like means nothing to anybody listening to this, but Miles Plumlee is, just for some frame of reference here, is like has been haunting me since we couldn't even trade Pau Gasol for him like 3 years ago or whatever that was. We saw Miles Plumlee play a few games. This was that season that like Jeff Hornacek's first season, and Miles Plumlee was just like balling out, and he looked pretty good. Like he was still young and he was sort of like an up and coming young center. And we were like, oh dude, we got to trade Pau to the Suns and try to extract Miles Plumlee. And the Suns like refused to do it. And now it's like he just every time I turn my head, Miles Plumlee pops back up again. And it's hilarious.
Did you say Miles Plumlee or the white Marcus Banks?
Exactly. The white Marcus Banks.
Yeah, he's the new guy that Lakers go to. Like, what about this guy? Remember this guy? Let's trade for him again.
Right.
But yeah, out of those three guys, I have no idea who we can get. I guess literally all you're asking for is second round pick for either one of them, or an expiring deal for Nick Young, or just a young prospect that you can look to audition pretty much. But who knows what Markham will materialize. Realistically, Lou Will is still our most attractive asset. And like we've talked about in the last podcast, you're not going to give Lou Will away for a late first round pick. And the fact that they haven't even, you know, put him on this list is evident. They value him more than a lot of Lakers fans do. And I think Mitch is a smarter GM than just to give him away for pennies on the dollar, essentially. Although one trade partner, you know, the Kamenetsky brothers were talking about this on the radio. I don't know why I had it on the other night, but they were talking about how Utah could possibly use a guy like Lou Will because they don't have any point guard depth, you know? And they said they'd for sure trade Lou Will for the Jazz's. Well, actually, the Jazz have a pretty decent first round pick. So at that point, maybe I'd think about it because it's like in the 16 to 18 range, you know? Maybe then I'll think about it, but, you know, that could be a potential team for Lou Will that could actually help a playoff team. But aside from that, it's kind of murky. We'll just have to see, you know, trade deadline. It's always a weird experience. When you think nothing happens, everything happens. When you think a lot of stuff is going to happen, nothing happens. So right. Kind of just got to play it by ear. So yeah, likely for the Lakers, nothing happens. Maybe they'll get an extra second rounder, maybe a late first rounder. We'll see. But yeah, that's pretty much it on the trade stuff. One other thing I wanted to talk about before we get into the games is, so Jordan Clarkson, you know, we've talked about Jordan Clarkson before. We've talked about his bad defense and how as a shooting guard in this league, you can't have two bad defenders as your point guard of the future and then have your shooting guard be terrible on defense as well. And, you know, recently on Twitter, people have been wondering why I'm so hard on Jordan Clarkson, because they'll tell me like, you know, D'Angelo Russell is just as bad on defense. Why don't you rail on him, you know? And here's why I'm hard on Jordan Clarkson. First of all, Jordan Clarkson is like 23 years old. And if anything goes wrong between the pairing of D'Angelo and Jordan Clarkson, guess who's going to be the first to be traded? It's not going to be D'Angelo. It's going to be Jordan Clarkson, you know?
Yep.
I'm being hard on Jordan Clarkson because I know that I have to be hard on Jordan Clarkson, because if things go wrong, he's going to be the first one out, you know? They're not going to ship out the point guard of the future. And if anything we've learned over these past few months is that Jordan Clarkson is not a point guard. So there's even less reliance on him on offense, because all you know, he's just pretty much a scorer, an efficient scorer, but he's not going to run your offense. So if things aren't working, the first place they're going to look to is Jordan Clarkson, because it's a superfluous position right now, especially with Lou Will there. And then you might be signing DeMar DeRozan, you know? So that's why I'm extra hard on Jordan Clarkson. Do I know that D'Angelo sucks on defense too? Yeah. But to be honest, objectively, he's not as bad as Jordan Clarkson. And that's like a fact. Our friend Alan was actually at the game the other night against against
all these horrible Houston. Games blend together at
Houston
this point.
So I asked him, how did Jordan Clarkson look on defense? And he was like, dude, oh my god, dude, he's like, anytime a screen comes, he pretty much disappears into nothing. He's like an invisible. He's always behind his guy, or he's either doing that sidestep thing where he's literally leading the guy to the basket
and kind of just doing the chest thing
where he leads you to the basket. It's almost like what Jordan Hill used to do, where he's not in front of the guy at all, but he's like right to his side and kind of putting his breasts onto your like body, and that's his like form of defense because he doesn't want to foul you. So it's pretty
bad. He's just, it sucks because he's so like bouncy, he's so like springy and like energetic, and he has the tools to be a good defender. I don't know if something's like he's just dumb or if he's being coached poorly. I think it's probably a comp. Well, I don't know if he's dumb. I mean, he shows good awareness offensively. He's really good at cutting off the ball. He has a lot of good off-guard skills. You know, like, if we end up with him as our starting two-guard, it's not going to be the end of the world. My issue with him defensively is that he's constantly, like, it's like you said, he's leading guys. Like, I was watching the Cleveland-Golden State game the other night, or was that two nights ago, because I wanted to watch good basketball for a change. And, oh my God. I mean, everybody here obviously knows Golden State is the best team in the NBA. I mean, I guess record-wise, I guess you could make an argument for the Spurs, but that's a different story. But Golden State, best team in the NBA. If you watch these guys play defense, oh my God. Steph Curry is, like, slower than D'Angelo Russell. But if you watch the way he moves his feet getting around screens, it's like a screen does nothing against Golden State. You know what I mean? Right. For a screen against the Lakers, it's like you set a screen on Jordan Clarkson and there's all of a sudden a quarter of the court is open. Yep. You know, it's so crazy how this happens. Like, I think that's so funny that Alan said, like, he just dissolves into it, because it's so true. He does, like, you know, the screen comes, he hits the screen, and then he just sort of, like, stays there.
He gives up
on the play, and it's like, do something, dude. Like, I don't know if this is, like, again, I have no idea if this is coaching or, you know, poor play or what's going on, but yeah, it's really terrible. He really needs to improve. He's shown, like, what was that game? Oh, the game where D'Angelo went down with the sprained ankle. Yeah. The Sacramento game where our team, like, really tightened up the defense in the fourth quarter. He showed flashes in that game of, like, being a really solid defender. Like, when he's locked in and he can, like, slide side to side and, like, he knows what you're going to do, but he's super quick so he can get there before you can. I've seen flashes. Those flashes are just, like, 1% out of a pool of, like, horrible, horrible play. So I'm not very optimistic it's ever going to get better.
And most of the time it is, you know, they call it Ole defense, right? Because you're pretty much leading the guy to the basket and then you never stop him. You're never in front of him. You want to be like, you know, both of your shoulders should be facing both of his shoulders. You know, if we were both in band, it should be like a shoulder to shoulder kind of thing. You know, instead it's like you're perpendicular to the dude and you're like, here you go. And that's what's disappointing. And that's why, you know, that's why I'm so hard on Clarkson, because I know that he has potential to be better and he hasn't shown it on the most important end, you know. There was a time when I thought that he could be so good offensively that it would, you know, make up for his defense. But as he's shown this year, not really, you know. I mean, the last five games, he's only shooting 40%, 18% from three, 16 points. So 1.6 assists only, you know what I mean? So he's not even shown that he's so superior offensively that you could forget his defense. That's the problem with Jordan Clarkson, never mind the fact that we have to make a big decision in terms of paying him this summer, and he could potentially be making like a lot of money, you know, so at least show us some improvement on that end. So it's not that it's not a mutually exclusive thing where I'm only bagging on Jordan Clarkson and I'm totally ignoring D'Angelo. That's not the case. It's literally that Jordan Clarkson, out of those two, has to be the one that improves his defense the most. D'Angelo has a little time here, you know, and he's also has more onus on him to
also,
run the
I feel like he's and... better right now than Jordan Clarkson is.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing, right? Objectively, there are more times when he's literally in front of his man, like even without like even on screens, like they both get killed on screens. But in terms of man-to-man defense, D'Angelo sticks with his man and can, like, cut off, like, drives and stuff. Never mind the fact that D'Angelo, just standing there because of his long arms, just tips a whole bunch of passes and gets a whole bunch of steals without gambling. You know, that's the problem with Jordan Clarkson. He gets steals, but they're gambles, and most of the time they don't work.
Yeah.
D'Angelo doesn't need a gamble on defense because his arms are so long that he can just stay in his place.
Like,
you know, that's the
makes a huge difference. Yeah.
So yeah, that's I just wanted to address that. And the other thing is, I want to address this is, like, I don't hate Jordan Clarkson. Full disclosure, I am 100% Filipino. So Jordan Clarkson is half Filipino. Like, I have like a contract. I'm obligated to root for this guy. So I'm rooting for Jordan Clarkson. I need him to play better defense, though. You know, you just can't move on with this duo who plays like terrible defense. And as I've told someone before, there are more historical cases of great point guards who play absolute crap defense in the NBA, like Steve Nash, Damian Lillard, Goran Dragic. I can go on and on. But there are a lot less cases of championship level caliber shooting guards who couldn't play a lick of defense. You know what I mean?
Right.
So there's my case on Clarkson and D'Angelo. And I guess we can segue into the games now, because there's one player in particular that I wanted to highlight. And it's a good contrast to Jordan Clarkson, because what do you know? We have a guy in our team who could actually play proper defense. And that guy I'm talking about is Anthony Brown. Tommy, your thoughts on Anthony Brown the last couple games? Like, you know, we can talk about his confidence rising in terms of the offensive end, which is great. He's starting to hit his three-point shot and whatnot. But I think it's the other end of the court that's really, you know, raised everyone's, you know, eyebrow. So what are your thoughts on Anthony Brown these last few games?
Well, a couple thoughts on Anthony Brown. The first is when you Google his name, Congressman Anthony Brown comes up. So Anthony Brown has not yet reached, prime
congressman status.
Prime congressman status, but he'll get there one day. Now, Anthony Brown, this is why we drafted him, right? He knows his role, and it's so funny. He was like the guy who, after we drafted him, came in and literally said, "I know what my role is." You know, you get so many of these guys who are awesome 3-point shooters and defenders in college. And then they come to the NBA, but they were also happen to be the best player on their team. You know what I mean? So then they come to the NBA and they're like, oh, I'm supposed to be like the best player on my team again. That's not the case. You know what I mean? Just do one thing or two things like really well. If you can do one thing offensively and one thing defensively really well, you're going to make it in the NBA. See Bruce Bowen, you know, even Tony Allen to an extent. I mean, there's like a long line of these guys who are 3-D. Anthony Brown, 6'7". 7'1 wingspan or whatever. Great size and length for a small forward. Pretty much the prototypical measurements you want for your small forward. And he's a knockdown shooter. He has a great looking stroke. He's shown a couple of flashes of this, like, you know, when the guys are rushing at him for the three, he'll do that like Bruce Bowen, like he's in the corner, but he'll do a pump fake and then drive to the basket. And he's shown that he's like, I would have to say that his time in the D League is like really showing, because
yeah.
If you watched his D-League, we never talked about this, but I used to watch all his D-League highlights like after every game. And there were actually a lot of highlights of him driving and finishing at the rim. So I have to think that, you know, his practice there has helped a little bit. But yeah, his defense is amazing, dude. Like, it's, when was the, like, since Trevor Ariza, I feel like, or like Kobe when he was healthy and good. And like, I don't even remember the last time we had a guy like this who could just get in front of you and stay in front of you. And his right. length is going to bother so many people, because guys elevate and they're not expecting this arm to just keep going up with them, you know? So I really, really like Anthony Brown. Is he going to ever be an all-star? I will put the Powerball lotto winning ticket on this right now and say, no, Anthony Brown will never be an all-star. But can he be a very, very good player on a contending team? Yes, he has all the traits you want in a solid, solid role player.
Right. So Anthony Brown, you know, he's not laying down the law as a congressman yet, but he's printing out the papers, filing them correctly.
This is all improvised, everyone.
He's making the binder. He's using the P-touch to actually print out the stuff, not just write it with a marker. He's taking all the right steps to be a congressman, a proper congressman on defense. And, you know, some people might think we're exaggerating when we say he's amazing on defense, but, you know, I put out that link. I might have put it out on Twitter, too. There's this website that actually broke down Anthony Brown's individual defense on Kevin Durant when we played the Thunder. And I actually missed out. I wasn't viewing it as closely during the game, but once I saw those individual breakdowns of how he was defending Durant, my mind was blown. I was like, and maybe this is what happens when you watch a team that doesn't play defense for the last 3 years, that any sort of like lateral movement, you're like, oh my God,
that is what happens.
The hand of God. That is what happens. But no, to be honest, like Anthony Brown was like, he was glued to Kevin Durant on screens, off ball. He was like, he was always active. He'd either, you know, dive to help out on in the paint, and then all of a sudden he'd still jump out to contest on a jump shot, you know? So he was glued to Kevin Durant, and he was really making life difficult on Kevin Durant with his like long arms and just contesting all of his jump shots. So the most impressive part to me was just how laterally he's able to stick to guys. You know, it's one thing to use your length but then get blown by or whatnot, but Anthony Brown does a good job, even if he gets blown by, recovering, you know. So I think that's something that's really been impressive to me. Just some quick stats. So the Lakers as a team have a defensive rating of 107.7, so this is points allowed per 100 possessions. So 107.7, guess where that ranks in the league?
Dead last.
You're right, dead last. Yes. So with Anthony Brown on the floor, though, we have a 95.9 rating. So pretty much
holy
like a 12
crap. Wait, what? I didn't even know that, dude. Is that a real stat?
It is. I mean, it's a small sample size, obviously, but, you know, and obviously there are probably other players in the rotation other than Anthony Brown, but Anthony Brown, just in the small time that he's played on the court, you know, makes a difference defensively. So that just shows you that he's just going to continue to improve. And the fact that he's starting to show some confidence in the offensive end, the last three games, career highs from 9 to 10 points.
There you
amazing.
Go. There you go.
No, but I mean, if you look at the way that he rotates and moves around on the perimeter, he actually moves to where guys can pass to him, like especially D'Angelo, you know,
wait,
he moves in spaces.
Sorry, I'm
yeah.
so distracted by that stat. You just wait, what was the defensive efficiency with him on the floor?
95.9.
Oh my god. So I know, okay, yeah, it's a small sample size, obviously. It's like three games or something. But just to put that in perspective for someone who's not looking at the defensive efficiency numbers right now, that would make us second in the entire NBA in defensive efficiency, as opposed to comfortably last.
Yeah, so, yeah, someone needs to promote Anthony Brown on his congressman, you know, route, so we'll see, you know, that's definitely an impressive stat, and he's shown it on the court, you know, if you just isolate his plays against certain players, you see a guy who won't give up and who's always in a crouch stance. I think that's the important thing on defense,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
people, you know, players will, you know, especially in the NBA where you're exerting so much effort on both ends, you're going to try to find any moment you can to catch your breath. And most players do that on defense. So you often see guys like Jordan Clarkson or Julius Randle. They'll relax on defense and they'll be in an upright position. But the good defenders in the NBA, you'll notice, they're always crouched, regardless of whether or not their guy has the ball. They never take a break off. And Anthony Brown, at an early stage in his career, has learned to be in that crouched position at all times, and that's a really encouraging thing to see. And you know, with Anthony Brown, you know, I obviously, whenever the Lakers like are looking at prospects, and we were analyzing him as a draft prospect, we always pick like the best case scenario for Anthony Brown or for any of the prospects that we look at. And I kind of let myself a little too ahead of myself in terms of my comp with Anthony Brown. And I remember the comp we were using when we first like were looking at him as a prospect. We're like, oh, dude, Chris Middleton. This dude is Chris Middleton. This guy's gonna be amazing, yeah. You know. No, he's not Chris Middleton. He can't do. He pretty much can't do anything but just shoot threes and then do the Wesley Johnson pump fake and then dribble and then shoot again, except he'll make the second shot. He can't do anything but shoot, essentially. Chris Middleton can actually pass. He can put the ball on the floor. He can do a lot of other stuff. And he's, you know, earned his max contract of like, I don't think he even got a max. He got $15 million a year, but Anthony Brown is never going to be that, but I think we centered upon a better comp for him, and that's Danny Green.
Danny Green,
you know,
is very reasonable. I think when they drafted him, they were thinking about a Danny Green type of guy.
Right, just a guy who knows his rotation on the floor, knows how to move into open spots, hit the open three, and then on the defensive end, just lock down. You know, he sometimes he can be invisible on offense, but that's totally fine if he's doing his job on the other end, you know, and just being there for when D'Angelo needs to make an open pass, you know, or make the
right
pass.
And exactly. And you can be invisible, but still visible. I don't know if that makes sense, but you could,
right.
Being invisible can mean two things. It can mean you're providing no impact or you're providing no stats. Anthony Brown might be invisible in the sense that he's providing no offensive stats, but that doesn't mean he's not providing offensive impact, because the fact that he can rain threes as accurately as he's shown he can in the last four or five games or whatever, that's dangerous, you know? So even if he's not getting shots, even if he's not making assists or, you know, whatever, doing anything on offense, his man is going to have to stick to him. And that in and of itself holds some value.
Right, right. So yeah, Anthony Brown, things are looking up. You know, I think people were disappointed in him, myself included, at the start of the year, where we're like, I don't know, even when he was getting minutes, I was like, I don't know if this guy can do anything. But if you look a little closer at what he's doing on the other end, you'll really see a guy who could be a very, very solid role player down the road for the Lakers, if not now, you know, off the bench. With that said, let's kind of get into, I guess, the last few games, last week of games. We won't go into too much detail about the games itself, but more talk about, you know, the main key players once again. So we missed the New Orleans win, 95-91 win, the Golden State debacle in Golden State, the Utah debacle. That was another an abomination game, 109-82.
I don't want to talk about that game.
And then Houston, you know, at home, we lost 112-95. I don't know if you even remember any parts of this game. I kind of don't.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do remember out of the New Orleans game is Slava Medvedenko. Hey, Slava!
Hey, Slava!
You know, I just... That's all. you know, that guy is on our podcast. So, hey, Slava, what's up? Hopefully he can come on sometime and talk some zha zha zha. But that was cool seeing him. He actually looked pretty good. You know, I think he's like,
hey, this is in good shape. You should suit up.
Yeah, exactly. You should. But aside from that, the one thing I remember from the New Orleans game was D'Angelo Russell providing the spark and momentum that the Lakers needed to get back in the game against New Orleans. I think they were down by like 7 or 8 in the third. D'Angelo came in, ran the offense well, was hitting guys on the pick and roll. He was hitting like perfect passes all night. He pretty much led that comeback, you know, and pretty much gave the team momentum into the fourth. And I think he hits like a shot, and then they call timeout, and then Byron Scott sits him, and he's never again seen in the fourth quarter, midway through the fourth quarter. And I was just like, dude, what the hell, man? Like, we ended up winning the game, but still, it was D'Angelo, like, that spurred that entire game on. He ended up with 13 points, you know, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. And I just remember all the great passes he was making in that game and how he was leading the team, leading the offense, and he didn't finish the game. So that's literally the only thing I remember from that game. Jordan Clarkson was 5 for 17. Lou Will was 4 for 14. So, yeah. Any thoughts on that game or D'Angelo in general?
Yeah, this is the type of game where I don't really mind if D'Angelo gets benched. I know it's
oh, how dare you? Get out of here.
Aaron, you want him to get that experience, but I know it. But the reason I don't mind it that much is because we won the game, and it's important for him to see Lou Williams is a veteran, and Lou Williams, although he sucked that entire game, hit like 4 clutch shots at the end, and right. more importantly than that, he handled himself well and didn't get too excited and didn't make any dumb mistakes. And it's important for D'Angelo to see that, like, he at least played a role in the comeback. He, I think, actually hit the shot that, like, got us the first thing in the entire game.
Oh man, you sound all kinds of bad, and I'm not talking about sick with the flu. I think your Wi-Fi has a network connectivity problems. Yeah, you cut out a lot, but it's okay. Pretty much what you said is that D'Angelo learned from Lou Will, and Lou Will actually hit some clutch shots. And even in a game like this where he led the comeback, you know, it's still good for him to watch and learn from the pros, and the fact that we did win was a good example of that. Outside of that win, it's been debacle and abomination after another.
Been horrendous every game.
It's been horrendous. I think D'Angelo has had some up and downs in terms of he's scored pretty decently. I think around 13, 14 points each game. I think the turnovers have been the problem recently, especially in the Houston game where he was whipping some wild passes behind him to like
way
no one
sloppy,
in particular. Yeah, it was really sloppy by D'Angelo, but at the same time, he's still progressing in limited minutes. He's only playing 25 minutes a game, but still getting up 13, 14 points. And I like the fact that his 3-point stroke is on right now. He hit some like 35 footer in Golden State, and that was in Golden State. You know, so I thought he played decently in the Golden State game as well. But yeah, overall, it hasn't been anything too amazing from D'Angelo. Hasn't been too terrible from him as well. He just needs to work on the turnovers and work on just gaining chemistry with the guys he's around, you know. Other players to highlight from your end. What have you thought about Julius Randle this last stretch? I know he's been struggling a lot. This last stretch, I think he's been showing a few signs here and there after being inserted in the starting lineup like a game or two ago. But what are your impressions on Julius Randle this last stretch?
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. I think he looks a lot better when he plays with the starters. His stats went down significantly after he went to the bench, and I think that's because he is not nearly offensive. Like, let's not forget, I mean, I know Randle has shown, has not been, like, he's been pretty terrible overall this season, offensively at least, but his first month, he shot 45% from the field. He had multiple games, like several games where he was 50% or more. He's just, his skills are so limited at this point that it's hard for him to be on a unit that doesn't have anyone else really who can do, like, he's playing with D'Angelo Russell, who's another rookie. He doesn't even have Lou Williams, you know, so because Lou Williams starts now. So it's like he's playing with a bunch of guys who are looking for him to do something, and he can't do anything because he can't shoot. So the fact that he can't shoot means he can't drive. It takes away his drive. So it's been rough for him. I mean, it was nice to see him play a little bit better especially in the last game where he was inserted back into the, was he in the starting lineup in the Golden State game? He was, right?
I don't remember, oh, but no, I know for sure the Houston game.
Or was it the Golden State game that Nance got hurt, so he basically played?
Probably.
Yeah, okay, so like in the Golden State game, I thought he played really well. In the Houston game, he played really well. The Jazz just have really good defense, so it's like the Jazz are a terrible matchup for Randle because they really pack the paint and they have a lot of length. But in the two of the three games where he essentially played as the starter, I thought he played pretty well. So it's nice to see that, I guess, quote unquote, improvement, if you want to call it that. But he's got a lot to work on over the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, something we talked about, you know, just in private about Julius Randle is that, you know, he's had to make some adjustments here in the NBA that he hasn't been able to fully embrace everything just because he has, one, had to work from coming back from an injury. He's had to work with his weight loss in terms of losing a lot of weight and dealing with what all that entails in terms of improving his conditioning, but at the same time losing some of that strength he had in college. But, you know, one thing I wanted to point out is that in Kentucky, a lot of the shots he was taking are the same shots he's taking in the NBA, and for some guys, doing the same thing you did in college is fine. But I think in my opinion, for Julius Randle, there's going to be an adjustment period because everybody's longer and taller in the NBA. And even though he was able to do that bang-em, crash-em, you know, smash bros in college, that he's finding that he can't do that in the NBA because, one, he doesn't have very good hands in terms of holding the ball or even catching the ball on rolls. So he's either going to get a turnover or he's going to get an offensive foul or he's going to take a very terrible shot, because I think something you mentioned is that you've seen his touch around the basket lose his touch around the basket recently. And I think that's because he's shooting around a bunch of trees and a bunch of traffic. And because he doesn't have a jump shot, he doesn't have the proper spacing to get that off against just one guy. Instead, he's taking it against like two guys in the NBA, where in college he was able to do that against two guys, you know, because the guys are smaller and he was just a lot stronger and he was able to do that. So for Julius Randle, I think in comparison to guys like Porzingis, D'Angelo Russell, and Karl-Anthony Towns, whose games I think translate better to the NBA because, one, they can shoot, I don't think Julius Randle's game, if you take a carbon copy of it from Kentucky to now, has a very good transferability to the NBA, just because a lot of what he did in college was a lot of bang-em, Smash Brothers kind of stuff against smaller defenders, and he was able to overpower guys and maybe get the benefit of the doubt when it came to like offensive foul charges and whatnot. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, my only thought is I agree that if you carbon copy him, his skills are absolutely not transferable. Talking about a carbon copy from Kentucky, I guess I'm not ready to say that his skills are not transferable at all, because a lot of these other skills that he has look like complete crap right now because he has no jump shot. And yeah, the second he gets any semblance of a jump shot, it's going to open all of this other stuff up. Like his crazy drives where he drives into the paint, like suddenly those are going to look slightly less crazy because instead of three defenders being in there, you know, maybe there is only going to be one help defender and he'll be able to get the shot up over that guy. What I'm saying is, like, we're viewing him, it's like guarding Nerlens Noel. Like, arguably guarding Nerlens Noel is harder than guarding Julius Randle right now, you know, because
yeah,
Noel's at least developed his game a little bit, has been in the league. But it's like guarding Nerlens Noel as a rookie. When he has the ball 17 feet away from the basket, you're standing like 6 feet away from him. So even though he can do these weird things where he can like sort of drill, he's got really good handles for like a 7-footer. And he could put the ball on the floor and he's like kind of nimble in the paint when he gets in there, like he can move around really well. None of that stuff, he can show off none of that stuff because he has no semblance of a jumper. And so once Nerlens sort of developed other aspects of his game, suddenly this weird stuff where he'll take you from 17 feet into the paint and finish, that stuff looks a lot better suddenly. And I think the same thing's going to happen with Randle. Like, it's not, to me, it's not that his drives aren't transferable. I know that NBA guys are stronger and longer and taller, et cetera. But for me, that's not the issue. The issue is everyone is defending him to do exactly what he's doing every single time because he cannot make a jump shot. His shooting numbers are atrocious. I don't have them in front of me, but it's like outside of 3 feet, he's shooting like 20% or something ridiculous like that, you know? So
yeah, I mean, pretty much Julius has a lot to work on. I think we'll both agree on that. And that's pretty much we arrive at the same conclusion going through slightly different roads, essentially, on what we think is the problem. But all in all, Julius has a lot to work on, and it's going to take him a full off season to really get himself together and relax, kind of. And also, probably the All-Star break will probably help him a lot, because a lot of what you see is a young guy pressing and trying to, you know, prove doubters wrong because he got picked seventh, and then now just trying to live up to the seventh pick, you know what I mean, as at one point the Lakers franchise guy. That's looking less and less likely to be the case, but that doesn't mean, you know, all hope should be lost on Randall. It's just he's a lot more rawer because he has a harder journey than some of these guys to take. So yeah, you know, with Randall, I just want to see a guy who's slowly learning here and there, step by step, in terms of the decisions he makes, because, you know, you don't have to take that shot in the traffic all the time, you know? I think some games we see him hold back a little, and that's the improvement that I like seeing from Randall, where it's like, okay, this is a bad shot, I'm going to pass it back out, I'm taking it back out, you know? Okay, this is a bad drive, I'm not going to do this crazy right. high dribble crossover into three guys, I'm gonna back it out and pass it to D'Angelo. Like, you can tell that's what he wants to do every single time. It's just, I love it when he recognizes this is bad and he just backs out. You know, to praise Julius a little, the one thing that is transferable is his ability in transition. You know, I think I saw this crazy stat where they showed like the guys who get the most points off transition, and Julius Randle's like right up there. He's like third or fourth, or right up there with like LeBron James or something, you know, where a guy, in terms of a guy who can just grab the rebound and like push the ball and either get points for himself or his teammates. You know, I think that's never been out of question when it comes to Julius Randle's game, because whenever he has space, he's amazing, you know? He's strong, he's fast, and he can utilize those abilities to its utmost extent because he has space. The problem right now is you put any sort of defender in front of him and it's going to be an easy offensive foul call charge because they know how to defend him. And it's a matter of him, like you said, developing a jump shot, also getting smarter mentally, knowing when to take smart shots. And also, I think he needs to refine his game a little in the post. He doesn't need to be a post-up player, but show me a drop step once in a while, you know? Spin the other way. Spin the baseline and kind of go that way instead of always backing down and then facing up immediately, or backing down and dribbling immediately into the center of the court where you know there's a bunch of defenders waiting for you, you know? So it's about small incremental steps for Julius Randle right now. Any last thoughts on Randle?
That's all I have, and I guess the only thing I'll add, you know, we both mentioned this repeatedly throughout, not just today, but throughout this podcast, but I'm going to hold off final judgment on him until I see what happens when they completely break his shot down and then build it back up. Right. Because if this guy, I'm like not kidding you, man, if this guy could even become like a 35%, like 35 to 40% jump shooter, it's going to make him look insanely better. You know, like and then from there, you'll feel like encouragement that he could get better and better and better. Right now, his form is what's killing him. Like, it's not his work ethic, it's not anything else. It's just his form is so horrible. And if the Lakers can hire some sort of shot doctor to fix that aspect of his game, he's going to look like a completely different player in 2 or 3 years.
Right. The problem right now, it's a game of what ifs, right? So let's play the scenario where Julius Randle never develops his jump shot and guys continue to play off
and
of him.
And if he never develops his jump shot, he's going to be a trash player. We can both agree.
Yeah. Exactly.
He'll figure out ways to do things just by gaining experience, but he's never going to be that like number seven player that you wanted to draft. He'll be like an average power forward.
Exactly. And you'll see, he'll be like a guy like Jared Solinger or Kenneth Faried that shoots below 50%. Right now he's shooting 40%, you know, where because he doesn't have a lot of tools in his arsenal to mitigate the fact that he can't shoot, you know. Earlier we were talking about a guy like DeMar DeRozan who can mitigate his lack of a three-point shot with other things like moving around, cutting, always cutting around the basket, you know, and then also posting up, being able to get to the free throw line. Right now Julius Randle doesn't have all those things in his arsenal to make us think that he can go above and beyond the fact that he doesn't have a jump shot right now. So right now the key is get a jump shot, bro. Key with Jordan Clarkson, play some defense, bro. With Randle, it's get a jump shot. So pretty much our all encapsulating thoughts on Julius Randle there, but it is encouraging to see him improve here and there and continue to rebound and just show a little constraint on the offensive end, little less turnovers and more smart play. So with that said, I don't really know who else to highlight here. What have you thought about Jordan Clarkson these last few games? I mean, aside of the atrocious defense, any thoughts on his offense?
Yeah, I thought offensively he's looked a lot better. He went through a stretch where he was scoring but shooting really inefficiently, and I was totally fine with that because I want him to be like, I'm the best player on this team, especially when Kobe's not playing. So I need to show like why I'm the best player on this team. Like, you need to get your shots up. And I know he's a team player, and I know he's never going to be that like alpha guy, but this is his chance to like develop his skills in real game time. I'm not going to say the games matter because they absolutely don't, but just in real game time against real NBA players with semi real NBA teammates. And so I like that. And so a couple games he shot poorly, a couple games he shot really well. And that's what I like to see. Just the fact that he's trying and being aggressive.
You're right. That's a good point to take. Even though he's struggled these last few games, the fact that he's working through it, you know, he's going to go through some growing pains trying to be the guy, but at least, you know, he has it in him to try and be that guy. Obviously, maybe the truth is coming out that maybe he's never going to be as efficient as we always thought he was, because when he tries to be that way, but you got to try.
You got to try. You just got to try, because the reality is no one's expecting Clarkson to be your alpha, your number one, or even your number two, or even your number three, really, you know, on your ultimate, yeah. Like, once you've developed all your young guys, once you've had all your, you know, draft picks, and once you've signed all your free agents, if you could have Jordan Clarkson be like your fourth best player and he was a second round draft pick, that would be amazing. And to do that, all he has to do is average like 14 points a game and shoot a high percentage, which he's shown right. He can do. But you want to also, while we don't have Kevin Durant and we don't have DeMar DeRozan, we don't have Batum, we don't have Ben Simmons or whoever we end up drafting, you know, like, you want Jordan Clarkson to get that experience being the guy now, so that in the future he doesn't shy away from the spotlight when it's like his time. Like, oh, D'Angelo Russell is developing into a top point guard. Kevin Durant randomly signed with us. Pass it to a wide open Jordan Clarkson. You want him to have the confidence to take those shots, you know, so.
Right, for sure, for sure. And, you know, he had a good game against Golden State, 10 for 17, 58% shooting, 22 points. So that was good to see. I guess the only player of note for me remaining is Ryan Kelly. No, I'm just kidding. it's Tariq Black. What have you thought of Tariq Black these last few games, and actually him getting some burn? And what do you know, showing some utility on the offensive end and being like a guy that cleans up, a guy that guys can find on the roll. Just a useful bench player that we all knew he could be. And then Byron Scott kind of trashing him after, like, I forgot which game it was. Byron Scott was pretty much, yeah, I don't like Tariq Black. Something along those lines where he's like, yeah, I don't like that guy. He doesn't show it enough from the bench or something. It's just ridiculous stuff that I don't even want to go into.
No, dumb. I mean, Tariq Black is like a really calm, cool, collected guy. And like his demeanor on the bench is, even when things are going crazy, he's just sort of sitting there like with his own thoughts. That doesn't mean he's not like celebrating internally. You don't need your entire bench to be Robert Sacre and Larry Nance. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay if you have a couple of chill guys. And I think Black is a really... Look, he clearly has flaws. I think the main things he does well, you touched on it just now. He's our best player at driving. Rolling. When he sets a pick, he rolls hard. He has great hands to catch passes. And he goes up to finish. Like, he wants to slam it on your head every single time. He's got better size and better length than Brandon Bass. I mean, his primary issue, he has two primary issues. I don't know if he's developed a mid-range jumper, but he's going to need one if he wants to make it in NBA. He hasn't had any opportunity to show it. In fact, I vaguely recall him making one in a recent game. So suggests to me that he's been working on it, which I like. Number two, and most importantly, his defensive rotations are horrendous. I don't know if you notice, it's like night and day when we have Bass out there versus Tariq Black. And when Bass is out there, Bass is completely outmatched. Like, he is 6'7", his arms aren't even that long. Like, and he will go up there and contest shots and like get blocks and like use his body. And Tariq Black is like I think he's 6'8 or 6'9". He's got like a 7'3 wings. I don't know what it is. It's bigger than Bass. And he plays like, it's like they play reverse measurements, you know, like Tariq plays like he has Brandon Bass's measurements and Bass plays like he has Tariq Black's measurements. But Again, he's young. Like, I know he's old for being a second year player, but he's doesn't have like NBA experience. He needs a coach who's supportive and can guide him and show him like, hey, this is like, do this, do this, do this, do this. Unfortunately, we don't have that coach because we have, you know, Byron Scott's ridiculousness. But yeah, they just need to give him some more minutes. And I mean, I think that's why they're looking to dump Bass, open up some more minutes for Tarik.
Yeah, for sure. What's funny to me is that if you've ever heard Tariq Black in an interview, he's like one of the most respectful guys in the league. Yeah. You know, he's always so thankful and grateful for his journey. And then you have his coach like just trashing him for no reason. He's like, yeah, I don't know why that guy's on the team. I hate him pretty much. It's like, okay, Byron Scott. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Byron Scott for you. Last thing we'll get into, I guess, is just, you know, Kobe Bryant. He's old. This is what's happening. He has that sore Achilles and, you know, pretty much the great play you saw towards the end of the year is completely gone because you can tell that he's pretty much playing on one foot, pretty much one leg. You know, he can't do anything out there, but he plays because of the fans. And, you know, Allen was at the Houston game. And even though he said Kobe didn't do much, he said it was still a joy and pleasure to watch Kobe pass. You know, he had 9 assists that game. And, you know, Kobe's not playing well right now, but the fact that he can still give you glimpses or give fans glimpses of what he was able to do, whether it be through a singular move or through his still somehow ability to play make for his teammates is a good thing. Any thoughts on Kobe? And
I mean, I just give him props for pushing through. He's clearly hurt.
Yeah.
And he knows that all the fans want to see him and everybody is like getting gouged on prices for these tickets. So
right.
I give him so much props for at least trying.
For sure.
And he's going out. You know, it for a long time there, it looked like Kobe was going to go out on like these horrendous terms. And like we were all going to have like this super sour taste in our mouths about him. But now, yeah. Now he's getting to go out on like good terms, like with respect and like dignity. And like even though he's clearly not who he used to be, he's like clearly showing that he acknowledges that he's not that, and he's just trying to put on a show for the fans and get out of the way.
Right, for sure. I think that's the most important part. He's getting out of the way. He's not, I mean, he shot 4-for-15 in Golden State, but he kind of knows there are certain games where he's still going to shoot no matter what. You know, it's Kobe, but for more of the lower profile games, he'll, if he's not feeling anything, which he's not on most nights, he's just gonna let the guys do their thing. And I think that's something we can appreciate. And you can tell he's not doing anything for stats at this point, because I mean, last few games, 7 points, 8 points, 5 points, 5 points, you know, he just knows where he's at this point, and I think it's a good place. I just hope that he can make it to All-Star weekend. You know, for me, I have no idea whether he'll make it till the very end, but at least play in your last All-Star game, you know, where you're around all those guys who respect you, and you can kind of just ball. If that's the one game you ball out in, ball out in the All-Star game, you know. So I think that's my hope for Kobe this year.
Right.
With that said, any last thoughts on anything Lakers related? Byron Scott?
No, I mean, Byron still sucks. That's everybody knows that.
Oh, there you go. I thought you got the flu from watching endless Byron Scott interviews on loop.
I know.
That wasn't the case.
Oh my God. God help me. That is a worse hell than any flu I could ever get.
There you go. With that said, we'll wrap the show up. Actually, we'll end the show right here. Once again, follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. You can interact with us there, send us questions, any topics you want us to talk about in future episodes and whatnot. Also, download and subscribe to us on iTunes and rate and review us, because the more 5-star rating and reviews you give us, Tommy.
I don't have anything this time, dude. What do you
All right, okay, here we go. Okay. The more rates and reviews of 5 stars that you give us, the more Ryan Kelly's hair will look less like his pubes. that doesn't even make any sense, but I just know he's rocking some weird stuff up there. It's not even a proper man bun. It's horrifying. I think Alan and I were talking about this, but we're like, I'm surprised he's still with his wife, who's like she's the daughter of like some NFL coach or something. Yeah, it's like, what is he thinking? You know, like, Ryan Kelly, you're out of the league. You should probably think about other job scenarios.
Yes,
and not look
dude,
like
he's out of
club, yeah, you know? Yeah. And I hate that I'm trying. Well, you know, nothing against Ryan Kelly and his personality. I'm sure he's a great guy. It's just you look bad, bro. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's all we can say. With that said, yeah, catch us on the next episode. We'll recap some more Lakers fun and hopefully something exciting happens. Hopefully someone has a breakout game and whatnot. So with that said, we'll catch you guys later. Tommy.
Bye.
And pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am
Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.